Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Last night was just awesome. I'm still just so wound up in what I watched last night. Why is it that it takes baseball across our country to get just grab hold of everybody? Or is it just because it's the Cubs that are sitting there last night and they're down? And then they come back and they rally, and Bruce Bochy's bullpen continues to blow. Could you imagine 32 blown saves? I mean, just think about that. 32 blown saves. Like, the Giants should have won the National League West if they just convert on, I don't know, half of those. They could have won easily over 100 games. They could have just blown everybody away, but their bullpen was horrendous. And so I'm watching last night, as I'm sure many of you were. We're going to have Pedro Gomez with us here in about 15 minutes. Pedro's actually in San Francisco at the airport, just leaving there. I'm watching the game last night, and I'm thinking in my head what Rob Manfred had been talking about in August, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, how we need to stop pitching changes and having all these multiple pitching changes within a game. So last night, what do we see out of Bruce Bochy? 1, 2, 3, 4 in the ninth inning. Now, I'm one of those that's all about strategy. So the strategy last night for the commissioner, I'm sure they're going to take that ninth inning. I'm going to ask Pedro about this. They're going to take that ninth inning. They're going to put it on a tape. And sometime in the offseason, when they go through what rules changes would we like to see and how we're going to redefine the game of baseball, let's limit the number of pitching changes. And my response would be, no. Look at what happened last night. If you want to change the rules of the game, you want to change the chess match. The chess match is what made last night so great. When you have bitchy, whiny announcers about how games are too long, those people need to go. Those people that complain about, oh, this game's taking forever, get out. Get out. Because nobody's complaining last night about the length of games. So, you know, when it comes to last night, and Baez is at the plate, and all the bullpen changes have been made, and this play happens, you know, this is what makes baseball so great.
Keep that go-ahead run at bay. Baez singles back up the middle. Hayward's being waved around, and Chicago has taken a 6-5 lead.
I am surprised at the pitch selection. I said it before, so it isn't like I'm saying it afterwards. This is power against power.
How great is that? Okay. We're brought to you by Subway, our opening hot headline. Subway, eat fresh. Think catering, think Subway. If you're at the office and you've got a business lunch, you need to order like right now at 10 o'clock in the morning, put your order in. Go to subway.com. Subway, eat fresh. Think Subway. Appreciate their support. So the Cubs win the series. If you're in San Francisco, you've got to be sick. If you're a Giants fan, you've got to be sick. If you're a Giants fan, you got to be pissed. How is it we didn't address our bullpen at all? And can I fault Bruce Bochy? Boch is one of the best managers around. He went through all the changes. He played the percentages. He played the odds. I heard Joe Maddon afterwards. I think it was with Ken Rosenthal, about how he did not want to face Johnny Cueto. And he's sitting there in the seventh inning and his team is losing. It's in his head. We might have to face Johnny Cueto in an elimination game. And Johnny Cueto had dominated the Cubs, and the Cubs couldn't hit Johnny Cueto. But the Achilles heel, every team has got one. Every team's got one. I don't know what the Cubs is, but every team's got one. We'll talk to Pedro about it in a few minutes. Lost in yesterday was Clayton Kershaw yesterday afternoon. So I told you yesterday, when I'm done with this show, I'm going to go find a nice, comfy spot, and I'm going to watch. Yeah, I pretty much checked out yesterday. I got a workout in between games, and I was listening to him on my phone. But Clayton Kershaw hit the seventh inning, and when Clayton Kershaw hits the seventh inning, you got to get Clayton Kershaw out of the game, and they didn't do it yesterday. Dave Roberts didn't do it. But somehow, and Kershaw was great. Kershaw was just terrific. So now tomorrow we have a must-win, final game, decisive game, elimination game, game number 5, and the Cubs get to go home, the Cubs get to rest. Darren Revelle just had on Twitter, Eric, that the opening amount of tickets or tickets price, the average price, $500. Medium price paid per ticket for game 1 NLCS at Wrigley Field.
Did you see what the Dodger game tickets were going for yesterday?
No. What?
$4. You could go see the Dodgers for $4 yesterday.
It's California for you.
It is.
$500, and that's before they know who it's going to be. So you got to figure the medium price is going to be $800. A seat.
Sell that ticket.
It's
not even a World Series ticket. It's an NLCS ticket. Just sell it.
I'm still of the opinion. Okay, so if they lose to Washington or the Dodgers, then it's a disappointment.
Absolutely.
If they make it to the World Series, whatever happens after that doesn't matter.
I disagree, but we'll agree to disagree.
If they make it to the World Series, just getting there. I'll talk to Pedro about it, but
yeah,
you disagree because
I just think they're the best team. I know Toronto is kind of hanging out over here in the American League, and nobody really knows anything about the Indians. I probably can't even name 6 or 7 guys on their team.
Yeah,
but the Cubs just have the it factor. They have the defense. They have Aroldis Chapman at the back end of their bullpen. They have enough starting pitching to win a World Series.
More than enough. Yeah,
but you know it doesn't always work like that. That's what makes sports great. The best team doesn't always win.
So,
or the most talented team, I should say.
No, that's true. The Cardinals are back on the practice field today, and it feels like they've been gone forever, which is good. During the course of an NFL season, this is a mid-October game. It's nothing more, it's nothing less, except when you're sitting there at 2-3, there's a little bit more urgency to it. But I would take it a step further than that. The Jets today put Eric Decker on the injured reserve. So they're beat up at wide receiver. And Ryan Fitzpatrick, even though he's a hometown kid, you're going to read a lot and hear a lot about Ryan Fitzpatrick coming back to Arizona and all that stuff. And that's great. It's fine. He was over at Highland, I believe. Either Highland or Gilbert. It's Highland. He's a Highland Hawk. And he's coming back. Geno Smith must really stink. That's all I can say. If you look at the quarterback situation of the Jets, we have a Jets quarterback here in town and Tim Tebow I'm going to get to in a minute. But here's the thing on the Cardinals. So you're home. You've had a long break. You had a hard-fought win against the 49ers. The Jets do not have, in my opinion, near the team that the Cardinals have. If you lose this game at home on Monday night, that would mean you'd already have 3 home losses on the season, just on its own front. You lose this game, you've got Seattle and Carolina. It doesn't matter to me what Carolina's record is. It certainly doesn't matter to Cam Newton. He's riding around on a scooter following concussion protocol, which is just hilarious to me. Yeah, we take concussions real serious with our players. I'm glad you do, or you say you do. So if the Cardinals are not able to beat a Jets team that's not that good on Monday night at home, it really is on them. You're going to lose 3 home games in the first month and a half? They should win this game. They should turn around and David Johnson should get the ball in his belly numerous times, 25 times. Just plow right through the Jets. And then you've got Seattle here, and we'll get into Seattle next week. But the schedule, to me, clearly ramps up. And this is a must-win game. You're 2-4 against and some bad losses, too, I might add. 2-4 and some bad losses. So I look at this game early, very early, and if Carson plays, they should win. So there's that on my mind. Colin Kaepernick named the starting quarterback against Buffalo, and Cam Newton riding on a scooter. This goes back to some stuff that I've been researching, reading about, hearing people talk about. Why is it that the NFL ratings are so far off? Peter and I talked about it yesterday, Peter King. And today it comes out that college football ratings are up about 5%. So there's this little bubbling as to, is college football better than pro football? And Eric and I have had this discussion through. It's not even really a discussion. We agree that watching college football is much more entertaining. The product, in my opinion, is much better. I think there's more urgency to the college game. There's more enthusiasm. where the NFL, with the concussion and the post-NFL and the stuff off the field, not that there's not stuff on the field, I get it. Pro NFL guy will say, well, yeah, well, what about Baylor? Are you forgetting about Baylor? No, I'm not forgetting about Baylor. I'm not forgetting about Jerry Sandusky and Penn State. But what the NFL cannot do, the NFL cannot reach into Corvallis, Oregon. It cannot reach into Eugene, Oregon. It cannot reach into many, many parts of our country where the college is what makes things go. Like the Dallas Cowboys can be very popular. Guess what? Cowboys-Bengals ratings dropped over the weekend. But Texas A&M doing what they're doing, being undefeated, people are going to pay attention to that. Houston Texans, we got Brock Osweiler. We've got it all figured out. Well, no, you don't. He hasn't been good. Houston Cougars, on the other hand, after losing to Navy, yeah, that takes a hit, but people are talking about it. In the South, what's a bigger deal, Alabama or the Atlanta Falcons? So across our country, and there's pockets where college football is not big. College football is not big in the East. It's not big in New York City. You can't tell me that UConn football is going to outrate what the Jets or Giants do. Okay, but I think across the country, you're going to pay more attention to the Buckeyes or the Browns, and as bad as they are. If you're in Detroit, are you into Harbaugh and Mark D'Antonio, or are you into what's going on with Matthew Stafford and Calvin Johnson retiring? So, you know, I look at what's going on across the country, and yeah, Saturdays is more special to me than Sundays. Doesn't mean I'm not going to pay attention to the Cardinals game on Monday night against the Jets. Doesn't mean I'm sitting here ripping on the NFL. It's just a fact. I don't find that the comparisons between the two and people trying to figure out why is it college ratings haven't dropped or they haven't gone head-to-head with debates. No, the political cycle's still going on. I just think the product is more entertaining. It's spread out. The games are close. There's fresh faces. People want to know who the next ones are. And there isn't all this bogged down stuff. I think the Kaepernick factor of taking a knee or sitting has offended a lot of people, no question. There are others that have said, you know what, I think this actually has opened up some dialogue that's been healthy for our country. Whatever way you go on that, it's out there. You know, we look at baseball, and baseball here in the last 4 days, since these playoffs have started, actually last week, since these playoffs have started, it is really, I think, shown that sport, if it's done right, marketed right, you can't tell me in San Francisco they're more excited about the 49ers and what's going on in the baseball field. Pedro Gomez is next. We'll talk with Pedro about all this. And the Diamondbacks general manager search. That is next with Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst. I'm Brad Sussmat.
It's time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sussmat.
I was good to catch up with Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst insider from San Francisco at the airport. The thought of, is this the best series you've ever seen and all that stuff? I'm not going to go there, but I guess just in simple terms, how would you describe the last 5-6 days of baseball that you've been watching?
Pretty darn good. Pretty darn good. The Wrigley Field atmosphere, there's a lot of expectations, obviously, because they ended up with the best record in baseball. They probably have the best roster in all of baseball as well. And, you know, there's a lot of nervous anxiety among Cub fans that somehow they're going to blow it. And then all of a sudden, you know, they come out, they win the first game, 1-0. Beautiful game. Beautiful baseball game. Win the second game. So, hey, they're feeling good. Come here to San Francisco and, you know, losing 13 innings. And then they're down 5-2 in the ninth. You know, there's people ready to jump in Chicago. And that 4-run ninth inning last night, just spectacular, spectacular. Come from behind baseball. You know what you want? Drama in the postseason, and two great franchises, two great fan bases. Couldn't ask for more.
So I told Eric, if the Cubs make it to the World Series, it's considered a big success. He's like, no, they have to win. They have to win the World Series, in his opinion, for it to be a big success. Where are you at on that one?
I think, you know, this is a club that has not been to the World Series in 71 years.
Right.
So getting there is going to be huge. I think that because of the team they have, because of the roster, you know, they're going to want to win it. But,
sure.
In the bigger picture, should they not? Should they reach it but not? It'll take a little bit of time, but they'll have to digest what really just happened. And I think they'll be happy with that, especially when you consider the strides that were made last year.
Mm-hmm.
Another stride this year, making it to the World Series, should they make it. So, yeah, 71 years is a long time to go since your last World Series appearance.
Like, the Diamondbacks have been there and actually won since in that period of time. So,
exactly.
You know, when you think of it in those terms, here's the part about it. We're talking with Pedro Gomez. He's at the airport in San Francisco. He's been following the Cubs and Giants and all the baseball stuff. Rizzo did not even – his batting average was like my waist size, which is either saying I'm really fat or nothing. And they had a bunch of young guys that got some experience in this postseason. And so this is just the beginning, it feels like to me, for the way this team is constructed. This is not one of those storylines, Pedro, of, well, the opportunity is closing, the window is closing. This is going to be something we're going to see, I would think, for extended periods of time out of the Cubs.
It should be. Their big issue is going to be, how do they keep everyone in a couple of years? You know, there's a lot of young players there that aren't making a lot yet.
Mm-hmm.
Javi Baez, Chris Bryant. It's going to be tough to keep a lot of this together. So, you know, I think they have to look at it as though our window is kind of right now. Although, you know, John Lester is tied up for a while. You know, Jake Arrieta is a free agent at the end of the year. I'm not sure they're going to spend that kind of money to keep him. You know, they're built. They're built to be here for a while. Their big issue is going to be, how do we keep everyone 4, 5, 6 years down the road?
Right.
They're going to have to make some decisions of who the cornerstone guys are. I think Chris Bryant will probably be safe when it comes to that thinking. I think Javier Baez is probably also going to be safe when it comes to that spectacular young player. You know, Addison Russell, another young kid who's not making a lot yet. But it does go to show, look, Theo Epstein's been on the job for 5 years there. And look how quickly they were able to draft and turn things around and make trades
right.
That brought in minor league guys at the time. Because Addison Russell was a minor leaguer at the time of that trade. He was not a star by any means. So, you know, they drafted correctly. They made the right trade. And 5 years later, they're a juggernaut right now.
Right. And that could lead over to the Diamondbacks. We'll get to that in a minute. Just one last question. The Dodger series gets lost in the shuffle with the Nats. Seeing Kershaw yesterday, that was great. But
yeah.
from a time standpoint, who does Joe Maddon and who do the Cubs want to win tomorrow's game 5 between Dodgers and Nats?
I would think more the Dodgers, and the reason being that Kershaw is really their only dominant pitcher. So you figure that you've got a better chance against everyone else other than Kershaw. And then you can match up with Kershaw with a John Lester mm-hmm. or with a Jake Arrieta. So you're not, it's not like you have to say, okay, we're not going to have a chance in this game. Whereas the Nationals are a little deeper, even without Strasburg. So, you know, it's kind of like before this series that just ended, the Cubs did not want the Giants. They would have much preferred the Mets. And that's because the Mets are depleted right now with their starting rotation. So, you know, if you can pitch, Tanner Roark has been pitching well. Gio Gonzalez put in a very good performance in game 3 for the Nationals. So, you know, they're a deeper rotation that can give the Cubs a little bit of fit.
American League side, Cleveland, Toronto. What do you make out of that series?
Huh. I mean, you know, after Cleveland lost Salazar, after they lost Carrasco to their rotation, it was kind of like, there's no way. And yet, they steamrolled through Boston. And they didn't just barely win. I mean, they were kicking Boston's rear up and down in every facet of the game. Corey Kluber looks like the Cy Young Corey Kluber right now. So I don't know how they're there. I will say this. Terry Francona is managing in a desperate fashion, and I think that's fantastic. The postseason is about desperation. So when he brings in, you know, an Andrew Miller to get six outs or more, and brings in Cody Allen to pitch 40 pitches to get four outs, it's about desperation. It's about, you know what, we have to win today. We'll worry about tomorrow tomorrow. And a lot of times that gets lost when managers start to say, no, we've got to stay exactly the same we did for 162. Well, guess what? A 3 out of 5 series or a 4 out of 7 series is not the same as 162. You can lose 3 in a row in June and recover. Not an issue. You can't lose 3 in a row in the postseason and recover normally. So I think it's fantastic. Toronto is slugging like crazy. I expect there to be high scores over there on the American League side. Not pitching games, but high scoring.
Talk with Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst insider, following Cubs and Giants. He's at the airport in San Francisco, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. The Diamondbacks general manager search. A lot of names have already been thrown out there. What are you hearing in terms of names around the Diamondbacks a week into the GM search?
You know, I've heard some of the same names that probably you've heard. I've heard Mike Rizzo's name mentioned. I've heard Ned Colletti's name mentioned. Mm-hmm. I've heard Ray Montgomery's name mentioned. I've heard J.J. Piccolo's name mentioned. I think at this point, you know, they've got to look at the more successful clubs and see that draft and developing is the key to every success. That's where I think this search is headed. Is for a draft and development guy, somebody that has a background in pretty much all facets of a front office. You can't have somebody that just knows one part or has never done anything. And I know that's kind of a popular thing in baseball to go for these young, you know, Ivy League guys that
right.
have never run a department. But I think in this case, you've got to have somebody who has run departments, who's run meetings, and be able to command the room. And I would be surprised if they don't go that route.
Meaning somebody who's already in the GM's chair or an assistant GM that's done it in the past, or are we talking about an assistant GM?
I would say, Brad, an assistant GM or an assistant to the GM who has run a scouting bureau, who has run minor league operations, who has run development, and has been at a right-hand man for a successful GM. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget, and I like to hold up Dayton Moore as an example in Kansas City, because Dayton Moore was John Scherholdt's right-hand man during Atlanta's fantastic run when they won 13 consecutive division titles. And Dayton Moore got to Kansas City, an organization that was in need of dire repair. And, yeah, it took a little bit of time, but look where the Royals are today
right.
compared to 8 years ago. You've got to have a plan. Look where the Cubs are today compared to 5 or 6 years ago when Theo Epstein got to Chicago. You need somebody that is going to know what they're doing in all aspects of the front office. And that's why I think, you know, J.J. Piccolo has been Dayton Moore's right-hand man in Kansas City. And look how successful the Royals have been over the last 8 years. He learned from one of the best and the brightest. So, you know, in talking to people in baseball circles, they think that's what the Diamondbacks need. Of course, that's what the Diamondbacks have needed for a long time, and they haven't made that kind of decision. So we never know with this organization.
No, that's true. But and one last point on this is, a week ago, the move comes down. You and I talked last week about how the Diamondbacks basically were being laughed at around the league, and it was a job that we didn't use the word toxic, but I think that was a word that I was hearing. Yet the other side is there's only a certain amount of these jobs. We're going to find somebody. A week later, we're 9 days following the dismissal of Dave Stewart. If things calm down a little bit in your circles in talking about this job being a desirable job, or is it just still the same that whoever takes this, they're going to have 2 years and that's it?
No, I mean, I think the people I've talked to say there's got to be a little bit of an assurance here that maybe some meddling won't take place,
mm-hmm.
that you'll allow baseball people to make baseball decisions and not be scrutinized at every moment by the team president or the team owner. And that's the more successful teams. Look, I talked to Tom Ricketts last night, who owns the Cubs. And that was one of the first things he told me is, we hired baseball people to make baseball decisions. I'm a huge fan, he said, but I don't know what Theo Epstein knows. Mm-hmm. And I allowed Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer to make the decisions. I did not meddle. And that's the key to every successful franchise is hire the best people and let them do their job.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't seem like that has happened here. And look, it's still a desirable job because it's only one of 30.
Right.
But there are issues. There are issues because of the previous track record, because of the strong knowledge. And I don't even want to say belief, the knowledge that you don't have autonomy in that job. And that's something that, you know, I think a lot of candidates would want. I'm not saying they're going to get it, but that's something they would want.
Stay well. Safe travels. Appreciate your time as always. I know you're busy this time of year. Thanks.
Okay, Brad. We'll talk next week.
See you. There's Pedro Gomez from the airport in San Francisco. Pedro's never missed, has he, Eric? I'm trying to think. In all the times where he's one day he's here and then the next day he's there. And this is the time of year where he could go somewhere on a moment. So has he ever missed? He's never.
You mean missed the segment?
Yeah.
Or missed a plane? Or...
No, missed the segment.
Sometimes it's out of his control. I mean, if he is in the air at 10:21 on a Wednesday morning, Phoenix time, then we have to reschedule him. But he's never...
No, he's blown off live shots on ESPN for us.
Of course. When he said he will be there, he will be there. When he can't be there, he always texts me the day before and says, hey, I can't do tomorrow because I'm going to be on a plane. How can we reschedule? So
he's told Bristol, I have to do Brad's show.
I think that happened like once.
Many times.
I think that happened like once.
Dozens. National SESMAT.
I think that happened once.
SESMAT. Pete Rose last night showed up on my television set again.
In Vegas? Signing things?
No.
Oh, no.
No. Want to get into that. Tebow, we told you yesterday about Tebow. There's some college football news and notes. And this Derrick Rose story, you talk about something creepy going on with Derrick Rose. The guy investigating this whole Derrick Rose stuff off the court, shot and murdered. We're going to have that on the other side next. So while the Cardinals are on the practice field, we've talked about them already in the show today and a lot of baseball, there's something in the police blotter today, and there's always something in the police blotter when it comes to sports, and I don't usually go down the path too far, but I just feel like you guys, you know, sports is an escape. However, there are times when you need to address something and talk about something that is out there because you know that the Titanic tidal wave is coming. The detective investigating Derrick Rose's rape allegations was shot to death yesterday. Los Angeles detective recently acknowledged criminal investigation into claims of rape by NBA star Derrick Rose was found shot to death in her California home Tuesday night. Nadine Hernandez, 44, found dead 2:45 p.m. yesterday. Police responded to reports of shooting, transported her to the hospital where she died. She wrote a letter to the attorney of the woman who claims Rose and two others raped her in 2013, confirming the investigation in order to clarify any misconception that detectives were not continuing to look into the case. Rose's attorneys had previously claimed there was no active criminal investigation, so she was pushing the envelope here. The home where Hernandez was located is listed as being owned by a retired LAPD lieutenant, but that remains unclear. They haven't found the weapon. She sent the letter confirming her work on the case after a federal jury ruled that the woman who accused Rose could not remain anonymous during an Associated Civic trial. So obviously everybody's after Derrick Rose today wanting to get a comment from him on this. This is going to be something in the news cycle. And I don't know where it goes from here, but it's just in the news cycle. Suns are at Utah tonight. And I bring this up. I don't usually make much out of preseason basketball either. Thank God it's not preseason football. But the Suns haven't had a bad preseason. And you know, by bad, it's not wins and losses. It's just I'm looking at minutes. And Earl Watson's been playing the kids, and Devin Booker has been playing well. I think in basketball, that usually transcends early in a season. Understand this. NBA basketball games at the end of October, November, December, January, and even into February at the All-Star break, not quite like, not even close to what it's like when it comes to the, well, let's just say the last 25 games of the year. Unfortunately for our hometown heroes, because they've done nothing for the last 6 years in terms of making the playoffs, though I think they're much better, we're going to want to see and need to see immediate results here in town. We just are. Like the Coyotes open on Saturday night against Philadelphia. The Coyotes have brought in a young general manager. They've got Shane back for another season. They're still promoting Shane, even though for years I've had people over there tell me we need to find other people to promote. So they try, but it doesn't work because there's just one Shane Doan. The Suns and the Coyotes have been irrelevant and off the radar for the better part of 4 years. Better part of 4 years, especially the Suns, even more than that. You can say the Suns a couple of years back had a late season playoff push. They didn't make it. So don't try to tell me, well, they had a great late season runs to try to make the playoffs where they take the best eight means you're not good, okay? Let's just not sit here and sugarcoat. Oh, but we saw progress, really. Well, what happened last year? So it's important, it's very important for the Suns in this year, in this marketplace, and the Coyotes too, to do something. I had somebody send me a note about Bobby Hurley, and he's like, how do you think ASU basketball is going to be this year? I don't think they're going to be very good, but that's not a swipe at Bobby Hurley. I think they're going to be somewhat better. He has some nice players, but they're not going to capture the marketplace. U of A this morning lands another top 40 recruit. Sean Miller has gone out and kicked tail nationally. That's just a fact. He's gone out and landed everybody and anybody that he's wanted to get. So in the marketplace, with U of A basketball, they're going to sell out in Tucson because there's nothing else to do in Tucson. When they come up here, they'll have a great draw. When Grand Canyon goes to Tucson to play U of A, which is great for our state, I'm going to talk about it a lot. We're probably going to be there. We should be there. So for the Suns, back to them, it's like, guys, do you see the possibilities here in the market? The football team's kind of teetered. There is the opportunity here. And it's important for them to get off to a good start. So I am paying a little bit more attention to the preseason.
You'd agree, though, that the Suns and the Coyotes at least have a plan in place. There is structure. There is an idea. This is how we're going to move forward. This is who we're going to build around.
Plans in place, though, change with these guys. That's the problem. That's the problem.
Have you noticed our local baseball team?
That's the problem. They get guys in place, and then it changes. And then I've got to be the one that sits and asks Ken Kendrick, Ken, why are we here again? Because I'm tired of being here again. I mean, it's great for what all the revolving door here in Arizona has done in the last 6 years has made real estate agents very wealthy. Because these coaches and GMs come in and get big houses, and then they get fired. They get their cans shot off. And then they go, and then they sell those houses again to another GM and another coach. We barely get to know these people. Just dumb.
But the Coyotes have young talent, and you would think the Suns, if some of these rookies, I mean, they gave up a lot to get to them. Hopefully they are young talents.
Eric, you can make all the sense in the world, and you are. But they don't make sense.
But would you rather have it the other way, where they go all in and overpay a bunch of veterans and get to the playoffs once as an 8 seed and lose, and then it's back to starting? That's the problem. Like, we are not L.A., like the Lakers will rebuild much quicker than the Suns. Why? Because they're the Lakers. That's just a fact.
Yeah, but you know, I think it's Espo who's all wound up about Eric Bledsoe is going to be great. I don't know that. He cannot stay healthy. Nobody can predict when a knee is going to buckle again.
Well, we know Devin Booker is going to be great. That can pretty much, unless he gets hurt,
unless, knock on wood.
There are lots of uncertainties. There's no doubt about it.
No, but this is not, you know, when you see the great franchises, like when you see the San Antonio Spurs or you see the Golden State Warriors, and there were years where the Warriors stunk But you see the Spurs, and it's just a model of consistency. It's just a model of consistency. You don't have stuff floating around where an owner may come in and just say, I want this, and I'm going to make this guy as miserable. Because, look, the bottom line on this year's Suns team, it's not Earl that's in trouble. It's Ryan. This is Ryan McDonough's thing. If it doesn't work out this year, then Ryan is out there shopping around. And we have another general manager who comes here, and that general manager may not like what he sees. The good thing about the Coyotes is Dave Tippett is here again. I like Dave. I think most of us that do this, I don't know anybody in this business, and I don't even know many fans, if any, that don't like Dave Tippett and don't think that he's not great for Arizona. We don't know that about Earl Watson. You know, we know that about Bruce Arians. We don't know that about what the next group's going to be with the Diamondbacks. So, yeah, I'm paying, is Marquise Chriss going to show me everything against Utah in a preseason game on a Wednesday night? No, but if he's going to get minutes, then they're going to get better. That's what they need. Tim Tebow showed up yesterday and made his debut. And there's some stories around that. And then Pete Rose last night. I'm going to get into both of them next. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat. So Tim Tebow yesterday, in front of like 1,000 fans, made his debut. You say you don't care, and it makes the front page of the New York Daily News. It was on every sportscast last night in town, which is to be expected. And I don't care. I don't care. And I know that there's people out there that just, when they look at sports, it's somebody like Tim Tebow that transcends to them between life and reality and all this. This guy has his relationship with his Lord and Savior, and he can reach out and put his hand and comfort somebody who's having a seizure at the game yesterday. And now we're going to have people showing up at games with their sick children or themselves in sickness and wanting Tim Tebow to come over and lay hands on him. Am I overstating this, Eric?
No, I'm right there with you. And usually you and I hardly ever see eye to eye on things like this.
That's what's going
to
happen.
I'm just happy we made it all the way to the fourth segment of the show without actually getting to in depth with what happened.
But you knew I needed to talk about
this. Of course. If this happened in somewhere else besides Scottsdale, we probably would have just been like, oh, yeah, this happened with Tebow, move on. But because it's in our backyard and that's what we do, we cover things or talk about things in our backyard, then it's.
This was in Glendale yesterday. I don't know if every game now is going to see a bump in attendance, so because of Tebow being out there. But we know that as this story spreads, because this was also, I saw Good Morning America used it today. Did the Today Show use it today? Did you see that?
I didn't see it, but I didn't watch a lot of the Today Show. Yeah, I mean, I think the games that the Mets are playing, the attendance will be spiked for Tebow.
I think wherever he is.
Yeah, but as a general rule, I don't think it's really going to push the Arizona Fall League, which is a shame because there are a lot of great players that have made their way through the Fall League over the years.
Sure. Pete Rose. Did you see FS1 with Pete Rose last night?
I saw him on the TV, but as soon as I saw him, my wife changed the channel.
Man, that's a hard watch. And I've done stuff with Pete all the way back to when I first got into the business, when he claimed, I didn't do it and all that stuff. And you see him along. It's like FS1 intentionally likes bleep shows. They just do. Let's put Kevin Burkhart, who's good, and we're going to put him alongside of Frank Thomas, who's a White Sox. Okay, so that's going to tick off the Cubs fans. And then we're going to put A-Rod up there, and that's going to get New York all bent out of shape seeing him. And then we're going to put Pete Rose in between the two of them.
Do you know how old Pete Rose is?
Oh, he's got to be.
Think about it. Just take a guess at how old Pete Rose is.
I'm 75.
You're dead on. He's 75 years old.
No,
Pete Rose is 75 years old.
Did you see the stuff on Twitter when he was leaning into shots?
No.
So in television.
Was he boxed up and he was like lean?
No, it was the guy next to. Yeah, he's leaning into the guy's shot.
Oh, jeez.
It's like he's trolling on the guy. And he comes out after last night's game and he just blasts Bochy and the Giants for not managing the bullpen correctly. And I don't know. It's Bruce Bochy. And Pete, your time has come. It's like when Mike Ditka was at the end with ESPN. Mike Ditka's great. Not saying he's not great, but that was a really hard watch at the end with Mike Ditka and Chris Berman. because they're talking to anybody that's over, I don't know, mid-60s and above. I think you got to try to talk to masses. You're not going to please everybody. Like, I think it's pretty cool when an 18-year-old tells me they watch what we do. I kind of like that because I already know we're going to get the 65-year-old. So that, and Pete Rose, that's just hard. And I don't know if they're going to keep using him. I would hope that as some of these teams get eliminated, you know, would Buster Posey be better on set than Pete Rose is on set? And the answer is, well, of course he would be. We have another problem in the NFL today. So today, Brandon Cooks of the New Orleans Saints, their wide receiver, he's not happy with the bow and arrow touchdown celebration crackdown. He started it. He began as a sign of his faith in God. Cook says he's never been fined or penalized for the gesture, which has become so associated with him, the NFLPA, and a partner company created an emoji of Cooks shooting an arrow. Of course they did. Let's sit around a table. Hey, if we create an emoji of him. Now, Washington Redskins cornerback Josh Norman was hit with both a penalty and a fine 2 weeks ago by the head of the NFL's officiating committee, explaining it mimics a violent act. So Cook says he's going to keep doing it as long as it doesn't hurt his team by drawing a flag. Cooks has adopted the nickname the Archer, which he uses on social media. That's great that you use that. I don't know. Are the Saints having a great season? Are you playing well as a team? Are you going to be the Archer after you get a first down on a third down and two little crossing pattern? Is that what it's there for? God, I love Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, I love when Larry gets excited, but geez, oh man, when these guys get first down stuff like the Cam Newton first down after it's a third and one, and he kind of steps back and falls over the line, he's got to step forward. Yeah, that turns people off. Don't know how else to put it. That just turns people off. Don't need to see that stuff. I feel much better now. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. There is plenty.
Yeah, you yelled about it. You yelled about a lot of stuff today. It was pretty good.
You know, I'm grumpy. I'm actually in a fine mood.
You just had
mood.
A bone to pick with all kinds of people.
Yeah.
Tim Tebow.
Tim Tebow. I mean, come on. It's great he puts his hands on somebody, but that ends up being the big story across our country. It should be about on the field. Every now and then, it should be about on the field. I'm Brad Sussmatt. We'll